Chapter 4. Imperial Fist's Frigate Unbreakable Truth, Trans-Neptunian Region, Pluto Approach. The fires of battle grew in Archimus's eye as he strode through the machine decks. The projection of Pluto flickered and shone in the left eyepiece of his helm. Behind him, Kestros and Andromeda followed, their voices silenced by the command he had just given.
"Do you have any questions?" he asked. "No, Lord," said Kestros.
"No. No questions," said Andromeda,
her voice surprisingly steady, considering she was almost running to keep up with their progress through the ship as it closed on the orbits of Pluto.
"In the circumstances, there are very few options, given that I doubt she would advocate fleeing."
Kestros growled.
"I thought not," she said.
"My strike point?" asked Kestros. "Hydra is a small moon, but still a moon. If this is to work, we cannot be hunted through the whole fortress."
"The Central Communications Centre," said Andromeda without hesitation. "They will have taken or destroyed the means for our forces to sense or speak to one another. We start there."
They reached a junction. A squad of warriors armed with boarding shields met them and fell in beside Archimus without a word.
"When you have..."
The name he was going to say caught against his teeth. He stopped in his stride and turned to look at Kestros, who had halted as well.
"When you have the target confirmed, send the signal. I will be ready at the core reactor controls."
"And then you will become the destroyer, Praetorian," said Andromeda,
and he saw that the expression on her face had lost all traces of her bite and bile.
"You may remain on board the Unbreakable Truth, Mistress," he said, "for all the safety that may afford you."
She laughed, the sound high and clear.
"No, I don't think so. Surviving this is unlikely to be the better option of those available. And besides, work undone is a tragedy."
Archimus nodded once.
"As you will it, daughter of Luna."
"Thank you, son of Dawn."
"Will it succeed?"
asked Kestros as Archimus began to turn, and he saw that the sergeant's jaw was set, his eyes focused on some distant point before them.
"I do not know," he said.
Around him the ship quivered as it cut through the void. Machine noise buzzed down the passage. The sound of running feet rang on the deck as servitors hurried to their tasks.
"But I do know that it is what we must do. If any in Lord Sigismund's fleet have heard our warning, they cannot reach Hydra in time. We alone know who is here and are able to strike."
He held Kestros's gaze for a moment before turning and striding down the corridor, his lone squad following in his wake. Before him, the doors to the teleportation chambers clanked open. Kestros and Andromeda remained, looking after him for a second, before the doors closed. Storage Vault 278, Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit. Red light blinked across Miss Madra's eyes as she came through the door. The crew surf at the opposite door turned fast and collected a Volkite blast in the chest. Flame raced through his body, ash blurring the pulsing light. She was already at the next door. Morhan and the rest of the auxiliary squad were behind her. The hatch in front of her was sealed shut, the keypad stubbornly blinking failure at each attempt to open it. A glance at it told her that she could fire every weapon at it that they had and do no more than distress the surface.
"Primary, this is row 2, she said into the vox. "Entry into the vault is deadlocked. I repeat, entry to target hangar is deadlocked."
"Code override is not possible," replied a voice across the vox,
and she recognized the texture of Hecaron's voice, growling from the communication control center on the other side of the moon.
"There is an auxiliary squad inside the chamber, patching you through to vox hailers inside the hatch. They have had no orders or external contact since the beginning of the mission. Make it sound good."
"Confirm," she said. "Make the link."
The vox speed spat static in her ear.
"This is auxiliary squad Ares," she shouted,
panting breath into the words. Beyond the hatch, her voice would be booming from vox speakers into the hangar bay.
"Open this hatch! Enemy is inside station and closing. We have senior astropath Nurine with us. We need access now. The enemy are inside the fortress and closing. I repeat, open this hatch."
The static boiled up in her ear again, but no reply came. She frowned and began again.
"This is..."
The hatch in front of her trembled as mag bolts released. She fought down a thrill of surprise as the door hinged outwards. A meter-thick layer of adamantium and plasteel slid outwards, and inwardly she reflected that it would need a turbo laser to bore through it. That, or more time and patience than she had. She braced to push it as a crack appeared around the door. She leapt through the gap. She saw a figure fall in a tangle of limbs, and then she was through, weapon raised and firing as she ran. Her shot hit an auxiliary in the face and burned through his head. Behind her, the rest of the squad poured through the hatch, and the other three auxiliaries died before they could fire a shot. She stopped after 10 strides. The chamber extended away from her, echoing and empty. Structural pillars rose from the floor to meet the vaulted ceiling. Scuffed hazard stripes marked the edge of the floor. Pools of dirty light fell from grates set high above and at the edges. Lifter hoists hung from rails overhead, bunches of chain hanging from them.
"Move the Homer in. We need to be done and clear of here fast."
"This is it," said Ashul as he stepped through the hatch. "This is a lot of emptiness to have as a key objective."
"It's a volatile munitions vault,"
she said, eyes still scanning the gloom.
"Near impregnable once sealed. Vox can't even get through without a link."
"I know what it is. It just seems a strange place to set up a teleport, Homer. We've just spent a long time shutting down the teleport jammers built into this place. I mean, why would we want to shunt troops through the immaterium and then have them appear very precisely here?"
"Who says it's for our troops?"
"Oh.
Get set up,"
she said, looking around as Morhan and another auxiliary lugged the second casket through the door. The dead astropath was long gone from inside, and the panels beneath peeled back to reveal the equipment within.
"We don't have long."
Plutonian orbit. The Alpha Legion fleet twisted around Pluto and squeezed tight. At the instant that Hydra fell, Silonius's fleet had split into 3 distinct parts. In the gulf beyond the system edge, 80 warships had spiraled around the Imperial Fist's vessels as they came about and clawed back towards Pluto's orbit. The afterglows from the fireship's detonations were spreading and changing color, like bruises left on the skin of space. Fire and debris bled from the Imperial Fist's ships. Blades of macrofire cut to and from them, latticing the dark. Closing with the moons of Pluto was the swarm of intruder ships that had drawn the defenders out. The wrecks of their sisters lay in their wake, sacrificed to the Imperial Fist's guns. The main Alpha Legion assault fleet cut through the sphere of orbit. 156 warships followed the Alpha into the curve of Pluto's gravity well. They swept past Hydra, pausing to drop troops into the already stricken station. That task done, the fleet bore down on the next fortress moon in its path. Nix poured munitions into the path of the warships, and fire churned the darkness around the Alpha Legion vessels. For a moment it looked as though they would have to run the gauntlet of the Wall of Fire, as they had with Kerberos. But then Kerberos itself emerged from behind the bulk of Pluto and fired on its sibling moon. Ordnance hammered into Nix's surface, burning through its crust and breaking scabs of armor from its bastions. Its own batteries fired back, and the space between the two moons became a bridge of burning light. If the garrison of Nix had hoped for help from Styx and